The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
A Christian graphic and web designer's case before the conservative-leaning high court argues she should not be forced to create websites with messages that go against her faith.
The state of Colorado is compelling and controlling my speech, chilling it, and forcing me to communicate a message through my custom, unique artwork. That violates the core of who I am.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, this is an interesting case, to say the least. It doesn't seem to end, does it, right? You got florists and bakers and photographers. Now we're dealing with, you know, wedding websites. The U.S. Supreme Court, of course, began hearing arguments yesterday about a web designer who's turned away a same-sex couple when it came to designing their marriage site. And I heard Elena Kagan, one of the justices, the other day, talk about where do you draw the line? And where do you draw the line? What if it's somebody who's interracial? You know, what if it's, you know, she goes through this whole litany of things. And it does make you think. Yesterday, they heard arguments. You might not be familiar with the story. Let me give you a quick overview of what's happening here, because I think it's critical. This is all a byproduct of the Obergefell decision when we redefined marriage in this country. And this is the next phase. It's not just that two people can get married, a man and a man, a woman and a woman. Anybody can get married, right? This is really about religious freedom. And that's why this case is so critical. It's a case that deals with your religious freedom and your freedom of speech. That's really at the heart of this. The case is called 303 Creative versus Alanis. And basically a graphic and website designer by the name of Lori Smith, she sued the state of Colorado over a statute that forces her to make websites for same-sex couples who are planning so-called weddings, even though they're doing so in a way that she is, you know, offended by. So the gay rights lobby was framing this as a violation of the public accommodation law. And from the way the argument went in the court and the questions coming from the justices, it appears as though the majority is going to rule in favor of Ms. Smith. Though, what kind of relief they'll craft for her, I mean, that remains to be seen. Notre Dame law professor Sharif Gerges, he believes they're going to rule 7-2 in her favor. That's pretty overwhelming, right? That's a pretty definitive ruling. The ruling probably won't come out until June. And, you know, that's normally these big decisions come out during the last day of their session before they go on vacation. I hope it's not the case. I'm hoping it comes out a little bit earlier. It'd be good to be able to talk about this and know where the court stands on this. But I'm guessing this could be another case where the ruling gets leaked early, just like the Dobbs case was leaked. Can I go back to that too with you for a second? When I say Dobbs, what's it make you think of? You think the leaker, right? How come we have no information, no conversation, no dialogue, no interest in the fact that one of the biggest Supreme Court decisions in our nation's history was leaked? How come, look, if I was pounding the street as a journalist, that would be my case, right? Man, you can really make a name for yourself in that. So you journalists, listen to me right now. Maybe look into it, right? I mean, what's going on? See, I think there's more to the picture than meets the eye. There's more to this story. It will come out one day. We're going to find out who is behind it. I think sooner is better. But, you know, I'm not hearing the Supreme Court justices saying, who did this? We need to know. We need an investigation. I'm not hearing the Biden administration. I'm not hearing conservatives. I'm not hearing anybody. I don't mean to get too far derailed here, but hasn't anybody but me thought about that? I mean, really? Major, major leak. So now what happens? See, this is the shadow that falls now over the Supreme Court. Now you're thinking, another big case, right? Will this one get leaked? What does that mean? I don't think it'll get leaked. I think Roe was a totally different thing. Dobbs is a totally different case. But, you know, who knows? The ladies on The View, and I'll just show you where we are here, right? Here's the total disconnect, right? One of the great Supreme Court justices that I have incredible respect for is Justice Amy Coney Barrett, right? She does it all. Great mother, Supreme Court justice, well-balanced, well-formed. She happens to be a Catholic. She's feminine, right? You got to love Amy, right? Justice Barrett. The ladies on The View, And forgive me, because I'm going to be uncharitable right now. These wackos. That's really what they are. Forgive me. I know I shouldn't be doing that. I should be exemplifying Christian virtue with my words. But these ladies are nuts. I'm sorry. They're crazy. They came out and they said that Amy Coney Barrett should recuse herself from the 303 creative case because she's Catholic. Listen to what they said. Check this out.
Amy Coney Barrett's religious faith is being called into question again. There are calls for her to recuse herself from a case which is about a web designer who wants to post a statement that she won't design wedding websites for same-sex couples because it's against her religious beliefs. Genius. It's a little different from just being a Catholic in this, to me, because according to the Washington Post, she's considered a handmaid in the religion. She's considered a high...
The Washington Post called her a what?
According to the Washington Post, Barrett was a handmaid or a high-ranking woman within the group. It's not just being a Catholic.
That's what they call it. Problem to be had that she didn't disclose it?
Yes.
That's, we got to go.
I want to explain that. What is this handmaid stuff? Right. I'll explain that to you in a second here. But Maggie, I want to bring you on because Maggie was just saying when that clip was running, where are the feminists, right? I mean, these women should be applauding Barrett, but instead they're attacking her.
Feminists should love her. She did anything in life that she wanted to do. Yep. She's a career woman that has worked her way up to the highest echelon of the courts.
Yep.
She's a mom. She has a successful family and career. Like, it's, people should love her.
Isn't it funny how they pick and choose, though? You're right. Feminists should be applauding her success and what she stands for. So what's this talk of Joe Behar referring to the Washington Post regarding Barrett's membership in as a handmaid? Amy Coney Barrett, she was a member of the Charismatic Covenant community, People of Praise. And her leadership position, as they call this a handmaid in that group, what Joy mangled was the whole thing. The idea was because, you know, of Barrett's religious beliefs, she should recuse herself from the case, since supposedly she wouldn't be able to fairly judge the case because her religious beliefs skew her position. And that, of course, is absolutely absurd, right? Every judge comes to his or her personal position with a set of beliefs. You can't help it. There are Jews, there are agnostics, there are Muslim. I mean, whoever sits on a court around this country, you can't help that. Right? Every judge comes to their position with a set of beliefs. The judge is supposed to look at the letter of the law, right? He's supposed to interpret the law, defend that law, represent that law. We don't see that, right? The problem here is Joy is saying, oh no, she's Catholic. Jeez, she'll never be able to be objective. She'll never be able to do her job, right? Unless the judge has some material connection to the case, none of them ever are expected to recuse themselves, period, ever. So, well, one final story here too, and this is a big one too, coming from a bishop. On Friday, I don't know if you heard the story. It's flying kind of under the radar. I almost stayed away from it. Hillary Clinton gave a speech at something called the Woman's Voice Summit, and in it she says this. I'll share what former presidential candidate, Secretary of State Clinton had to say. She says, "We've come a long way on so many fronts, but we're also in a period of time where there's a lot of pushback and much of the progress that has been taken for granted by too many people is under attack, literally under attack in places like Iran, Afghanistan, or Ukraine, where rape is a tactic of war, or under attack by political and cultural forces in a country like our own when it comes to women's health care and bodily autonomy." So she compared, like Joy Behar, they're total disconnected here. She compared pro-lifers, I mean, do you make this connection? I just really want to highlight it for you. She compared pro-lifers to war rapists. Pro-lifers to war rapists. God bless every one of you pro-lifers out there that are defending women and defending the children in their womb. Marine veteran Lisa Bodenberg, she joined Fox and Friends Weekend, discussed, you know, her reaction to Clinton's remarks. Take a listen to this.
It's absolutely repulsive for her to say something like this. First and foremost, the overturn of Roe v. Wade does not ban abortion. And that's very important to note because it's the basis of her entire argument. It simply returns the power to the states. But more importantly, for her to compare us to the women of Afghanistan is absolutely repulsive, and in my opinion, that thought is something that we can't fathom. And thank God we can't. The women of Afghanistan have been for decades fighting for their rights. They do not have rights. They have no education for little girls. They have to be chaperoned by a male everywhere they go outside their home. Their faces must be covered. And more importantly, they are subjected to extreme violence on a regular basis. When we want to talk about violence, imagine a country so bad that the parents of Afghanistan were handing over their babies. You have mothers trying to literally hand their babies over to the U.S. Yes. Marines during the Afghanistan pullout. Imagine violence so bad that you'd rather hand away your child, not knowing what was going to happen to them, probably never seeing them again, rather than take the chance and raise them in your own country. That's the type of violence that they are subjected to over there. That's not something that we could even compare to anyone living in the United States.
It's unbelievable. It's hard to comprehend. It's hard to even imagine. And really, for a mother taking her own offspring, her child, a mother will do anything for her children, right? To give it to a total stranger, I mean, that's supreme sacrifice in love, because you want what's best for your child. You know what's going to happen in this country, especially if it's a woman. Oh, my gosh. Get ready for it to be abused, sold into sexual slavery. Bishop Strickland took to Twitter after Hillary Clinton's comments. Listen to what he said. And bravo, Your Excellency. I just want to say thank you, sir. Thank you. You know, so many people throw stones at our bishops, point fingers, say they don't say enough or do enough. Here's what Bishop Strickland said. He said, please don't listen to this evil woman, referring to Hillary Clinton. Please don't listen to this evil woman. Her lies and immorality need to be silenced for the good of humanity. And then he, of course, later clarified. He said, of course, to be pro-life is to respect the life of even of those who attack unborn children. Violence is never the answer. Let us pray for the conversion of all who promote the murder of unborn children. But when they speak lies, we must counter with truth. Boom. Right? When they speak lies, we must counter with truth. Look, that's what I do every day here. I try to bring to you what's going on in the culture, because, man, America is being spoon-fed. You know, they're being spoon-fed lies, sugar-coated poison. And depravity. I turn on the network news. I turn on cable news. There is such propaganda that is being put forward to the American people. And I just want to bring to you the reality here, the truth, these basic moral tenets that we have as Catholics, and shine light on them. I want to counter them with truth. That's why I'm here. I know that's why you also support Relevant. I just want to say thank you for that. I am grateful for your support. I really am. I am very, very grateful. Let me grab a quick call. Dr. Bob Tabali is going to be stopping by here, too. I want to get to him. Rosa in Brooklyn, New York. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. They are so wrong when they attack us. Every first Saturday, we have a vigil at Old St. Patrick in the city. All we do is have a mass first, yep. And then we try to just walk, yep, praying the rosary two blocks only, right, to the Margaret Sanger of Planned Parenthood. There are nuns, there are priests, there are friars, there are regular people just praying the rosary, witnessing. And there's a couple of people handing out literature. That's all we do. A sidewalk counter on the other side. These people, this Saturday, when we stepped off the property, the church, they attacked us like vicious dogs. They came at us, pushing us. With their fists, with their hands open, yeah, in our chest.
That's horrible.
They had me. I fell backwards. I'm not exactly a kid. I fell backwards against the door. Other people, they were being attacked on all sides.
Well, Rosa, let me interrupt you for a second. That's actually assault. If somebody pushes you like that, they lay their hands on you, you know, you can call the police. They have all these boundaries, these bubble walls for pro-lifers, right? You're not allowed in a certain proximity.
They were there.
They didn't do anything? The police were there?
Yeah, the police were there. Thank God they were. Yeah. Because at least, you know, at a certain point, they did arrest some people, finally.
Oh, good.
Finally, they started arresting some of these people. But the problem is that they had cameras directed only on us.
Yeah.
So if we raised our hands defend ourselves, just to ward off the pushing and the shoving, And the
you have a right to defend yourself, Rosa. You have a right to defend yourself. And let me just, I'm going to hold it here because I've got to take a quick break. But Rosa, I want to thank you for what you do, because I know it can be dangerous. I know it can be terrifying to get out in the streets like that. You're encountering an evil is really what you're encountering. You're facing off with a lot of hatred. And we counter that, as the bishop has said, one, with truth, but secondly, with love. And your prayers are making a difference, and your witness is making a difference. I'm grateful for you, Rosa. Thank you so much for being on the street there and letting other women know that life matters and that you care about them. I've got to take a short break. When we come back, I want to change gears. There's a lot to get into with you today. Here's a question for you. Why are so many people coughing? Have you noticed that? I was in church the other day. A kid in front of me was coughing up a storm. I thought, uh-oh, is it COVID or something else? As of late November, COVID-19 cases in the U.S. were stable but high. On the other hand, influenza is rising rapidly. It's on its way to peak much earlier than the typical flu season. 14 million sickened, 8,000 have died. I'll look at it. Relevant Radio runs on horsepower, your horsepower. Donate any vehicle and keep your station running. Join in with thousands of other listeners who have given their unused vehicles at relevantradio.com/car.
The Drew Mariani Show.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Faith over fear.
Yeah, that's what I hope to bring. You know, our faith will conquer all the fear. There's nothing to worry about, right? Nothing to fear, especially if Christ is on your side. It's good to be with you. Thank you for joining me in about 37 minutes, maybe a half hour or so. We'll pray the chaplet. So if you have somebody who really needs prayer today, let them know. We'll gather at the top of the next hour. Let's pray for those who are sick. As I said, I was in church on Sunday with my wife. I actually leaned over to her and I said, if the people in front of us turn around, don't shake their hand or for a sign of peace, just wave and say peace. This kid was coughing up a storm, right? And sometimes people cough into their elbow, which is really the right thing to do. He was coughing in his hand. I'm thinking, oh no, you know, I mean, what do you cough? And it wasn't just one like intermittent cough. It was like every 5 minutes, every few minutes, he's coughing. I'm thinking, dude, you know, I don't know. So Kathy and I are fine, right? We survived and we did not get sick. Thank God. But it makes me wonder. I've noticed a lot of people coughing lately, and you know, it raised some questions for me. The idea that the novel virus that got out of its cage in China, right, so to speak, in 2019 and went around the world killing and disabling literally millions, started in a wet market in Wuhan, that's been dismissed by the scientific community. Pretty much dismissed, I should say. The dominant theory now is that the virus was developed in the Wuhan virology lab and somehow got out into the wild. Maggie, you have audio on this, right? Let's play that. Hey, listen to this. Here's a little bit of audio. It's a piece from Great Britain News. Came out yesterday. Check this out.
Right, the chief national scientific advisors help cover up the truth about the origins of COVID-19. That leaked emails saw them hot and bothered about maintaining, quote, international harmony and preventing, quote, potential harm to science, rather than actually pursuing the actual truth. And just to add to all of this, a former vice president to the EcoHealth Alliance, the US NGO partnered with the Wuhan lab, has spoken out in an upcoming new book in which he reveals that COVID was genetically engineered and leaked from the Wuhan lab, covered with the fingerprints of Anthony Fauci. Well, bit by bit, the COVID conspiracy theorists, yeah, well, they've all been vindicated.
Yes, they've been completely vindicated. The Wuhan lab leak theory was credible.
Yeah,
the likes of Facebook and the likes of Twitter censored all of it. And it seems, especially from these explosive claims from this ex-VP of the EcoHealth Alliance, that the US government knew about this because they were funding research that looked into SARS-CoV-2, which actually causes coronavirus, through gain-of-function research, which is banned in many countries, by the way, because it accelerates the rate at which viruses jump to humans, which explains possibly why COVID-19 is so contagious.
Yeah.
But not only that, but scientists in the UK made a concerted effort to actually cover this up. The question is, why would they do this?
Why would they do this?
So this theory, just one final thought on it, and we'll get Dr. Tabali in here as well. The theory was given fresh plausibility. Actually, this week, after a scientist who was the vice president of a group called EcoHealth Alliance actually turned into a whistleblower. EcoHealth is a U.S. tax-funded nonprofit group They collaborated with the Wuhan lab on bat virus research ahead of this outbreak. And Andrew Huff has come forward and said that the virus was genetically engineered in this lab. And this lab that saw the potential for it to be leaked back in 2016, there was a concern. According to the Washington Examiner, Huff had reviewed the funding proposal, which included gain-of-function research. And that makes the virus all the more lethal. That's what we're seeing. So, of course, Anthony Fauci, the one responsible for funding the research, and the president of the Alliance, both have said the virus came out of the wild, even though there's been no evidence to support the claim. And right now, epidemiologists are seeing a steady number of people getting COVID. Still out there, right? We're not out of the woods. But there's also an increase in flu. There's something called RSV, a respiratory, I think it's syncytial virus. I never get the word right. There's especially hits kids. My son's fostering a little boy, and he just had RSV. But the Hill reported the CDC is saying that the flu has actually sickened 14 million people in the country. 8,400 have died. Joining me today for perspective, Dr. Tabali. He's our of course, our COVID expert, our infectious disease doc. It's always good to have him here with us. Dr. Tabali, thank you for your time again. Good to talk with you.
It's great to be with you, and I promise to try not to cough.
Well, we're at a far enough distance. I'll be okay with that one. Yeah, that would freak me out just a little bit. Let's talk about these numbers first, if we could. I mean, why are we seeing what appears to be a huge number of flu cases so early in the season? I don't know if this is a normal number or give me your take on it. I mean, where are we in terms of 14 million people being sickened by influenza and almost, eight and a half million dead, right? 8,500 dead, well, I should say.
You've had a lot of people on the show talking about masks. Are they beneficial? Are they not beneficial? Mm-hmm. And so on. And so for the coronavirus, It's an aerosol transmission. It's airborne transmission. It's lighter than air and highly infectious in that manner, and the masks don't really protect against its transmission. However, the masks are very, very good at preventing droplet transmitted illnesses, like we have with these walking pneumonias, like mycoplasma and chlamydia pneumonia, like we have with influenza, with other common cold viruses. And so all these things that we were doing for the past couple of years that we're not doing anymore, wearing masks, keeping distances, things of that sort, kind of keeping to ourselves, they actually dramatically negatively impact the transmission of influenza. And these walking pneumonias, mycoplasma and chlamydia pneumonia, we see a tremendous rise in them. So anytime I hear my classic description of a kid with walking pneumonia is, 16-year-old kid standing behind you at McDonald's who's been coughing for like 3 weeks, 4 weeks at a time. He got this wet kind of lusty cough. Yeah. And they're very infectious. It's something that's always been ubiquitous in our community. It's everywhere. But now that people aren't wearing masks, people have talked about an immune holiday or an immunity gap where we haven't been exposed to these agents for a couple of years. And while we still have immunity to them, it's not as briskly impactful as it has been in the past. Yeah. And people are getting sicker quicker. And, now we're seeing admissions to the hospital and serious cases with people with any one of the combination of the three of respiratory syncytial virus. Syncytial. You can think of it as syncytial.
Thank you. Syncytial.
Syncytial. So a respiratory syncytial virus and then influenza and COVID. Yeah. So we're seeing people co-infected or tri-infected or any one of the three. Yeah. And, historically, we've been always very worried about having influenza and COVID together because people notoriously didn't do well. The vaccine that's available for influenza, they did guess right this year. They picked the strains that are circulating. The influenza vaccine, it doesn't prevent you from getting influenza, but it can help prevent serious illness and death. I strongly recommend it for people. It's not a genetic type of vaccine. It's not a messenger RNA vaccine. It's like, the old style vaccines. Right. Takes about 2 weeks to kick in. So, But influenza is worse this year for whatever reason. We're seeing people that even after they recover from influenza seem to have that kind of immunological problem that people with COVID would have after they recovered from the acute viral infection, where they had prolonged, you know, quite prolonged respiratory difficulties or almost kind of like fibrotic changes in their lungs. So,
you know, doctor, finish your thought, please.
Whether they've changed some genetic material, you know, between the viruses, we don't know at this point. But it appears that influenza may be, you know, a couple of steps up the ladder in severity this year. But hospitalizations are way up, especially above people above age 65.
Yeah, I saw a news report this morning saying that there's new evidence that mask wearing was relatively ineffectual. I don't know if you saw anything about that. Your thoughts? I had another physician on by the name of Dr. John Littell, who was adamantly opposed to the mask wearing, even when we were in the height of the COVID pandemic. But your thoughts on that? Have you heard anything about masks? Because I know there are certain states even thinking about, as numbers begin to spike again, reissuing these mask mandates.
Well, there was just a study published the other day about N95 masks aren't effective in preventing COVID transmission. But they're effective in everything else, though. Everything else that you can think of that causes colds and pneumonias and stuff like that, the masks are effective in preventing that transmission. And, you know, I know that from being a doctor. You know, you walk into a room and got patients coughing in your face and they've got, you know, bacterial infection, and because you got the mask on, you don't get it. But I would agree, and, you know, the data seems to be strongly supporting that the mask wearing is not effective for transmission, preventing transmission of COVID. But it does help prevent influenza and pneumococcal pneumonia and mycoplasma pneumonia, chlamydia pneumonia, the walking pneumonias. You know, so if you're going to go out to the supermarket and you have an underlying respiratory illness, you know, like COPD or something, and you want to protect yourself, you know, feel free to wear a mask. But if you think that it's going to prevent you from getting COVID, it's probably not going to.
Well, my guest today is Dr. Robert DiPaoli. I only have a few minutes with the doctor today. If you want to join us, I'll jump into the phones. You can get in. This number is good all day. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. We've got another physician calling in now, doctor. Dr. Paul from Los Angeles is joining us. Doctor, good to have you on the air. Dr. DiPaoli, welcome.
Hi, Mr. Mariani. It's a privilege. And I'm a practicing pediatrician in the area of Los Angeles. And then I do see a lot of these cases coming to the clinic. I even saw an 18-year-old coming with the RSV.
Wow.
But it's not that bad, you know. So usually it's all in babies, but this year is very weird. And also I want to ask the guest, what does he think about this COVID vaccine? The people say that they decrease the immune system, whether all this problem came because of the COVID vaccine.
Dr. DiPaoli, I'm assuming you made all that out. What do you make of these vaccines that are out there for the COVID?
I did, and I'm pediatrics trained too, so I like talking to pediatricians.
Awesome.
You know, we're seeing RSV in adults, and I've had a couple of patients die, a couple of adult patients immune compromised for other reasons, but unable to control the RSV. It's a small airway disease problem, and it can be bad in adults. But as far as the vaccines, patients ask me, should I get vaccinated? My answer to them is, unless you have a severe immune compromise, organ transplant, significant issues that you would already know about, I can't really recommend getting boosted at this time. The booster, the bivalent, multivalent booster that was brought out, it's already missed its mark. We're already on to the next level of viruses that don't appear to have, the vaccine does not appear to be effective for. We lost all those monoclonal antibodies that were out there, every single one of them. None of them are effective against these new BQ variants. And every time people get vaccinated again and again and again with one of these boosters, the window of effectiveness is actually gets shorter and shorter and shorter. And one thing that I've seen in my HIV population, because those are the people I monitor for this, is their CD4 counts, which is the cells that you want to have high to have a normal immune system. Everybody that's been fully vaccinated and boosted, their CD4 counts are dropped like 30-40%. Yep. So, I mean, I think that I've talked to a couple other HIV providers around the country, and they've seen the same thing. There's certainly a lot of controversy about the fact that could these vaccines be, unintentionally diminishing one part of the immune system, but we seem to be seeing that in the HIV population. Yep. So. So I personally don't recommend the boosters to patients unless they have underlying serious medical conditions.
Hey, Dr. Paul, thank you. I'm grateful for your call.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome anytime. Feel free to dial back. I only have a moment or two left, doctor. And before, you know, there's a lot of people want to call. We'll have to bring you back. I want to follow up on something that I led with prior to bringing you on. I don't know how much you followed the latest news regarding the origins of COVID-19. There seems to be a lot of evidence pointing to the fact that it did not come from a wet market. I don't know where you stand on that. How many scientists actually believe COVID originated in the wild and showed up in a wet market in Wuhan, or perhaps because of the funding of gain and function research that we were doing in that lab, the U.S. was financing that, it's more likely that it somehow got out of that lab?
Well, I actually ordered that guy's book. It's going to be distributed, I guess, today. Yeah. So I've yet to see my.
Let me give the name of it too, Doc. The Truth About Wuhan: How I Uncovered the Biggest Lie in History, by Andrew Huff. That book is hitting the shelves today. But go ahead, Doc.
Well, you and I talked in the first few weeks of this whole thing, and it seemed very evident that this was not a natural origin virus. If it was, we would have seen this breaking out in certain pockets, regionally, and had to contain it. It wouldn't have had this huge, dramatic, explosive presence all over so fast. If it was a naturally occurring thing, we would have seen little outbreaks in certain areas in China that they would have to quarantine and so on. And you want to know it's even worse. Mm-hmm. They're working on gain of function for this virus called Nipah virus, which is another bat virus. And there's published data on their gain of function funded by the United States government. That virus is front up, kills 40% of people that get it.
Oh, no.
That's far worse than this. Wow. And they're working on that in China.
We'll have to follow up. Doctor, let me leave it right there. I've have to bring it back for at least an hour. We'll dive into this in the not-too-distant future. But my gratitude for your contribution over the years as we've made our way through COVID-19 and as we continue to look at what flu is doing today. We'll catch up again soon, okay? Thanks for being here.
Okay, God bless everybody.
Thank you. That's Dr. Robert Tabali. I'm up against the clock. I need to take a very short pause. Say a prayer for Dr. Tabali. As I've often said, he's gone through, I believe it's spiritual warfare. He's doing something wonderful for unwed mothers and for women who've lost their children. When I return, we will change gears. Monsignor James Shea will be stopping by. Of course, the chaplain is right around the corner.
Your news, The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Your news now.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More information, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
This is The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos.
That's a classic, isn't it? A little Nat King Cole there for you. Today, of course, the feast of St. Nicholas, the patron saint of Scotland and Russia and Greece, also the patron of charitable fraternities and guilds, and of children, and of sailors, and of unmarried girls, and merchants, and pawnbrokers. Crazy, right? It keeps going on and on and on. But he's also the patron of something else. And this is a little weird. You might never have heard this before. He's the patron saint of sex traffic victims. You may not know a whole lot about St. Nicholas or even this special area of his intercession, so I thought I'd share this with you.
Far from a silly, tubby cartoon character, St. Nicholas of Myra was a serious, prayerful man, a deeply loving bishop, and, most strikingly of all, a gallant hero to maidens in distress. In fact, it's something he did while still a young man that makes him an especially timely saint for us today, something that you could say makes him a patron saint of sex trafficking victims. It all started when Nicholas's wealthy parents died and left him a large inheritance. As a member of the clergy who lived an unusually disciplined life of fasting and personal poverty, Nicholas had no use for the money and immediately began looking for ways to use it for the good of his neighbor. One of the first opportunities he took was the case of a poor man and his three daughters. The father was under a time constraint. If he couldn't scratch together enough money for his daughter's well-being, they would be forced into prostitution. Nicholas decided he would intervene, but devised a dashing plan to keep it secret. He would slip out at night and provide an income to the father and his daughters in the form of sacks of gold, which Nicholas threw deftly through the windows and chimney of their house. To this day, especially in the East, icons of an athletic St. Nicholas sprinting by this poor family's house to slip them their gold are common, and they look a lot more like images of a valiant, handsome young Robin Hood than of a doting old man. And according to legend, this manful, courageous, and heroic character did not decrease with age. Years later, he made a stir by getting into a physical altercation with a leading heretic in the middle of a church council. So St. Nicholas Day is a good day to remember that saints like Nicholas aren't only the tame, easygoing stuff of picture books. As the true St. Nicholas reminds us, what the Catholic Church offers the world is heroes. And as victims, from those three young sisters to today's trafficking victims, would tell you, that's just what the world needs.
In my gratitude to Catholic Vote, I'm joined now by Monsignor James Shea, president of the University of Mary in Bismarck, North Dakota. You can find him at umary.edu or easier website, I think, to remember, comethemary.com. And he, I just found out today, served on a task force with North Dakota's attorney general on the issue of human trafficking. Monsignor, good to have you back. You are a man of many hats. You always surprise me.
Good to be with you, Drew. Happy feast to St. Nicholas.
Happy feast day to you, too. Human trafficking in North Dakota, let's pick it up there. I mean, that seems hard to believe. How prevalent is it? How'd you get kind of caught up in that?
Well, no, it is an astonishing thing, because you wouldn't think that human trafficking would be something in a rural area like North Dakota. But it's important for us to telescope back and to recognize that there are probably more slaves right now in the world than at any other time in human history.
Wow.
This is, you know, we congratulate ourselves on being so, you know, modern and progressive and humane, but the world is a dark place and in deeply in need of the redemption of Christ. And right now there are 27 million persons in the world who are victims of human trafficking. 18,000 people are brought to the U.S. every year in some form of human trafficking, and 30,000 are trafficked through the U.S. on their way to other countries. Of those, 1.2 million children every year in the world are sold into sex slavery. And so this is an urgent kind of issue. What happened for me is that I was like most people. You know, I recognized that there was prostitution in the world and human trafficking, but I thought it all happened, you know, in Thailand or something. And I was asked to be on the task force for human trafficking for the North Dakota Attorney General. And this was several years ago when North Dakota was going through an oil boom. And so there were lots of people flooding into North Dakota from all over the country and indeed all over the world, because there were high-paying jobs. And along with those high-paying jobs, along with that influx of people, along with kind of the oil boom, gold rush mentality, came a lot of dark things, and human trafficking was one of them. And so when we came together to begin to discuss all of this, I was deeply, deeply moved to hear the story of so many people who are sold into slavery, even here in our country, or who are smuggled across our borders, and who find themselves all over in various places that you wouldn't expect them to be. And it's a desperate and a terrible thing. You know, Pope Francis has said that that trade in human beings is a modern form of slavery, and it constitutes a true crime against humanity. And so it really is something which we should pray to St. Nicholas about, but we should also take concrete actions if we can to stem the tide of this, because it's a real terrible situation of victimization of innocent people.
You know, it's interesting you say, you know, you wouldn't think North Dakota. My eyes were open too. You know, I was in Wisconsin. I was living in Wisconsin, broadcasting out of the network headquarters for Relevant Radio, and I did an interview with a woman who was sold into sexual slavery. And I know the very place, the truck stop she said that she was taken to and trafficked out. You know, it was an eye opener for me. And rural America, where, you know, I didn't lock doors, you know, you didn't worry about leaving the keys in the car. I mean, it was just that culture there in the Green Bay, Wisconsin, and the Midwest. It was, to me, it was just so trustworthy. And yet, you know, she shared a harrowing tale for sure. Is sexual slavery the primary type of trafficking? I mean, 1.2 million children sold into sexual slavery every year is just unbelievable. You say we have more slavery today than we've ever had in any other time in history. That's another stat that just shocks me. What is the preeminent form of slavery, and why today? Why is it so rampant?
Well, the human trafficking is the third largest criminal industry in the whole world, Drew. The first is drug trafficking, and the second is arms trafficking, and third after that is human trafficking. And human trafficking does take the form of there are people who are being trafficked for cheap or free labor. That certainly happens. And there are other reasons as well, but oftentimes those intermingle with each other. One of the reasons, and I just want to put my finger on this, one of the reasons that sex trafficking is so prominent within the sort of human trafficking enterprise is because it's the primary source for pornographic material. And so you know that pornography is a multi-billion dollar business. And it's important for us to understand that pornography is more or less prostitution caught on film. Almost all pornographic material, certainly all sort of child pornography, but also just general pornography, involves people who are often doing things against their will, and who are in bondage or in slavery in some form or another. And so I think that's really an important thing. This is something, for instance, you know, porn addiction is a common thing among young people. And so when I'm speaking to the students of the University of Mary and encouraging them to stay pure in all of their actions, even when they're alone in their room with their phone, I try and remind them that it's not simply a matter of virtue and purity. It's a matter of not participating in the worldwide tragedy and horror of human trafficking and the slavery, the enslavement, and the misery and the destitution of so many millions of people throughout our world. Yeah. In other words, whenever one participates in the sin of pornography, one is also supporting that industry and the enslavement of people, even as the person who's viewing the pornography becomes more deeply enslaved to sin. But, you know, it's a really diabolical thing when you consider children and young women and other people moved across borders, held in bondage, subjected to derisive and undignified things. It really is something for us to pray about. And to be alert about. Everybody who's traveled through an airport has probably seen a person being trafficked and they didn't know it.
Wow.
That's how prevalent it is. And so it's important for us to be alert. And if we see something which is weird, which is happening, mm-hmm. if we see something, we should say something, as they say.
That's well said. My guest today, Monsignor James Shea. If you want to join us, feel free to dial in. The number here is 888-914-9149. We'll go to Albuquerque, New Mexico, Father. Nick is listening there. Nick, hi, you're on the air with Monsignor Shea.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
In New Mexico, and especially on the border, there's an increasing problem with cartels getting into the business of human trafficking. And you don't hear anything about it in the news. Mm-hmm. Like, even mm-hmm. in New Mexico, and it's... I mean, it really should be talked about more. I mean, we're basically being, like, our own citizens are being trafficked to Mexico and other countries. And, yeah, that's, I just find that the media has just been silent for way too many hot-button issues. Something's off about it, you know?
Yeah, I think it's a great point. And, Monsignor, I'd love your take on that. I mean, it's something I'm really concerned about. You see how porous our border is. People coming over in camouflage and ghillie suits, a lot of gotaways. I can only imagine how many people are being trafficked into the country by those cartels, as Nick points out. Your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I think that the drug cartels are engaged in all kinds of nefarious activity, and they're really opportunists. Evil is opportunistic in its very nature because it has to feed on good. Evil is always parasitic. It's always eating away at anything which is good or true or beautiful. And so there's an opportunistic nature to evil. And so, yes, those organizations, criminal organizations that are involved in the trafficking of drugs also very easily can get involved in the trafficking of human beings. And it's important for us to understand that this happens both in sort of what we would imagine in a seedy setting, but there are also sort of more sort of effete or sort of shiny settings in which this can happen as well. In other words, human trafficking occurs not just as a sort of response to poverty. We think back to the story of St. Nicholas and him saving those three young daughters from being sold into slavery. It's not just in response to poverty. There's also quite a lot of human trafficking and sex trafficking, which happens in situations of economic prosperity as well. There's a lot of transaction that happens and a lot of money going back and forth.
You know, he brought up another great point. I mean, we don't hear a whole lot about this. I mean, you really don't. I mean, we hear about drugs coming over. We know we have a fentanyl crisis. Why don't we hear more about it? And Monsignor, because we only have about 2 minutes left as well, you know, what can we do to make a difference? How can we as a church step in, come to the aid of those in need? How can we stop this?
Right. So, you know, you don't hear as much as you really should about it. For instance, a couple of years ago, my friend Jason Adkins, who runs the Minnesota Catholic Conference, was able to get legislation that was almost universally adopted by the Minnesota legislature, bipartisan legislation linking child pornography and human trafficking and prohibiting it. And imposing new fines and those kinds of things. In other words, there are things legislatively that can be done in terms of tightening up our laws and enforcement and empowering law enforcement to be able to do these human trafficking stings, which sometimes are very effective in sort of discovering and rooting out these issues. And that was championed by the Minnesota Catholic Conference, and yet it got almost no play in the media. And so that's a real difficulty. So we can act legislatively. We can be very aware as well. We can support charities, Catholic Relief Services, for instance, and other Catholic organizations run initiatives which combat human trafficking. We can support those philanthropically. We can make sure that our local dioceses and parishes are doing something about human trafficking. When I was on the Attorney General's Commission, we convened all the Catholic priests and all the Lutheran ministers in North Dakota for a summit on human trafficking so that they could be aware of what was happening in their own communities. There's so much that can be done.
Monsignor,
above all, of course, we have to pray.
We do. I want to thank you for everything you do. Great to have this conversation with you today. It's important. And I hope people will check out your wonderful institution. You can check out youmary.edu or come to Mary. CatholicEducation.com, one of the most affordable Catholic educations you'll find in the country.